The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and J.C. Abbott. Fellas, the last podcast in 2024 for the Three Down crew, man. I can't believe the year has flown by.
It really has. And 2025 is a very big year for Three Down Nation because we will be celebrating our 10th anniversary in May. So first off, thank you, everybody, for your love and support over the past 10 years. And secondly, if you are someone who has been with Three Down in one way, form, or fashion since day one in 2015, you are an OG. And we give you extra respect, extra credit, because we love and support you just as much as you love and support us.
Continues to be an absolute pleasure to be a part of it with you guys. And 2024, I would stand to argue, maybe our best year yet. There's still way more we can accomplish, but every year we keep raising the bar.
What could we do for our 10-year anniversary party?
I think Dunk should eat a Costco hot dog. He refused to eat at Grey Cup. Refused. I think we should make it happen.
We'll live stream it. For everyone.
You only wanted me to do that because I wasn't rooming with you. JC would have felt the wrath of that afterwards.
That is true.
10 years, though, for real, man. Like, that's
it's a long time.
Crazy to think. I feel old when you say that. So thanks for aging me.
Well, you are significantly older than me, but we look the same age. So we got that going for you.
Just for the record, I was graduating high school when you guys were starting the site. So that's how long it's been.
And yet, you look older than all of us.
This is true. I've taken very poor care of myself.
It's the stash.
It's the stash.
Let's get into some CFL talk, boys. The Players Association released its first ever team report cards. Oh, goodness.
Sportsbooks making the Toronto Argonauts favorites to win the 2025 Grey Cup.
American running back Kevin Brown signing with the Toronto Argonauts.
Coaching changes across the Three Down League.
And CFL players working out for multiple NFL teams. But first,
the Montreal Alouettes and Edmonton Elks have executed a QB swap, with Cody Fajardo heading west and McLeod Bethel-Thompson going east. Fajardo has an offseason roster bonus due on January 15th, while Bethel-Thompson is still a pending free agent. Who won the deal, Montreal or Edmonton?
I'm going to take the side that you guys are going to hate, and that's sitting on the fence, actually. I really like this deal. Sorry, but I do like this deal for both sides because, you know, it just makes sense. And I think we should have more of these trades happen. Like, do you guys remember when Cody Fajardo went to Montreal and Trevor Harris went to Saskatchewan? If that was a trade, it would have been so much better. So this time around, Danny Machocha is like, F it. I'm going to get a trade done. Cody Fajardo doesn't want to be here anyway. And I think stylistically, that's what really stands out to me, is that Cody Fajardo, with all due respect, is not the elite athlete that Trey Ford is, but he's close in terms of how they play the quarterback position. McLeod Bethel-Thompson is not the athlete that Davis Alexander is, who I think is underrated as a runner. I think we'll see a little bit more from him in the starting role in terms of running the football. But I think it makes sense. And, you know, talking to people around the league, they were adamant saying that Cody Fajardo is done with the Alouettes. after Davis Alexander signed his extension that essentially made him the starting QB based on the money that he was paid. So when you look at it from that standpoint, it makes sense for the Alouettes to cut all that tension out of there and get rid of it. As much as Danny Machocha and Jason Moss really grew an affinity for Fajardo, and Moss had that going back to their days in Saskatchewan. So I think it makes sense on both sides. You know, the one thing real quick before I move on here and let you guys have your take is people talking about this being a paper trade. Like, why would these teams waste their time doing that? You know, there had to have been some sort of discussions behind the scenes when this deal is coming together. Like, let's say, you know, hypothetically, whether it was the Elks or the Alouettes that reached out first. Let's say it was Edmonton. Okay, I don't know that for sure. But Edmonton reaches out, and Danny Pachoch is probably like, well, yeah, a trade can make sense. What about McLeod Balthus-Thompson? He's a pending free agent anyways. You know, do we want to allow your team to talk to Cody Fajardo and his agent and vice versa? Like, I would have to imagine that some of that went on, especially when you consider, you know, based on my own sourcing, Cody Fajardo was number one as a target the Elks wanted to get to back up Trey Ford.
To me, and I spoke with McLeod Bethel-Thompson's agent maybe 20 minutes after this trade was announced. He was aware that the trade had taken place. He said he has the utmost respect for Danny Machocha, called him one of the smartest football people in the Canadian Football League. He said he wasn't comfortable speaking on behalf of his client, McLeod Bethel-Thompson, but did say that there are a lot worse guys you could learn from as a young quarterback. McLeod Bethel-Thompson would be one of the best, and I think there's some good evidence for that. McLeod Bethel-Thompson kind of helped mentor Chad Kelly, right, in 2022. And, of course, Chad Kelly goes on to be the MOP of the entire CFL in 2023, leading the Toronto Argonauts to a 16-12 record, one of the best teams we've ever seen, at least in the regular season. Oh, what did I say?
16-12.
Oh, that's
a lot of games in a regular season.
Make sense. It doesn't make sense. 16-2. My
Christmas
apologies.
Eggnog with some rum in it or something.
Yeah, maybe. Or that, or I just need to sleep for the next week. I don't know. It's been a long year. But 16-2, one of the best regular season teams of all time. Didn't translate to the playoffs, but that's okay. They won the Grey Cup the year before and the year after. To me, I would say the Alouettes won this trade, maybe. And the reason for that is I just think McLeod Bethel-Thompson is the better player. I really do. I know some people will look and say, well, but he doesn't have a contract for next year. Well, Cody Fajardo technically has a contract for next year, but the Elks are never going to honor it. So for all intents and purposes, he doesn't have a contract for next year, right? We've reported that Cody Fajardo is due a $200,000 offseason roster bonus on January 15th. The Elks are not giving him that after giving Trey Ford a $100,000 signing bonus with upwards of around $375,000 that he can earn in 2025. Like, they're just not doing that. So for all intents and purposes, these players are both pending free agents. They'll both have an opportunity to get new deals done with their club. I suspect both will get done. Again, McLeod Bethel-Thompson's agent is optimistic that a deal can get done. He seems to be under the impression that McLeod would be willing to be the number two in Montreal and has expressed interest in signing a new deal with the Alouettes. And yeah, he's a little bit older than Cody Fajardo, but I think he's got less tread on the tire, right? McLeod Bethel-Thompson, one thing you got to give him credit for, that man is never hurt. He is always ready to go. And I think his style of play lends itself almost like a Trevor Harris to playing well into his late 30s, possibly even early 40s. Like, he's a true pocket guy. He's athletic enough to maneuver the pocket, but he is somebody who makes his living with his arm. Cody Fajardo, though, you know, I think as he's gotten older, has gotten a little bit more reliant on his arm, is still very much a running athletic quarterback. And I think there's some concerns even from last year with how he broke down a little bit with his hamstring tear or pull that I think he termed it a hamstring pull. So I like this move a little more for the Alouettes. I like it for Edmonton too, but I'm not going to be a fence sitter like Justin Dunn. So I'm going to say that the Alouettes won this deal.
I'm not going to sit on the fence either, but I am going to go in a slightly different direction with my answer. And that's that I think Cody Fajardo won this trade because I think he is going into a really good situation to be the backup quarterback in Edmonton. Not only is this a team that clearly coveted him and wanted to go out and get him, but this is a place where you're playing behind Trey Ford. And look, all three of us here on this podcast, I think, are believers in Trey Ford and his potential, believe he deserves the shot to be the franchise guy, and hope he delivers on that. But he is a guy who at times has been a little erratic. His results have not always been consistent, and rightly or wrongly, over the early stages of his career, he's got a little bit of a knock for being injured. He got hurt in his rookie year. He got hurt this past year, which will give a backup some opportunities. If you're Cody Fajardo, you look at that, and that's a pretty enticing spot to be the backup because it means you'll potentially get on the field. Then you add in the fact that you've got a very intriguing young coaching staff with an offensive coordinator in Jordan Maksimek, who has proven he can maximize quarterbacks who have a similar skill set to Fajardo in their ability to move with their legs while also throwing the football and attacking down the field. I think that's a really nice match for him to go there. And I would not be surprised at all if he plays significant minutes this upcoming season and has some success in Edmonton.
You know, that's a fair point. I just think for Cody Fajardo, that as you well laid out there for the reasons that he might want to go to Edmonton, his best spot was Montreal. Like, I thought if there would have been a little bit of time, perhaps after the holidays, to take this in, that he could have understood that, you know, it's a similar scenario to what you laid out with Davis Alexander in Montreal. Jason Moss really likes Cody Fajardo. We know that. Danny Maciocia as well. This is why he wanted to do right by Fajardo with this trade if he did want to be moved. And I felt like for a lot of those same reasons that his best spot was in Montreal, knowing the offense, having that rapport with Austin Mack and the rest of the receivers and the whole team there. And oh, by the way, he was a Grey Cup MVP for the Alouettes as well. So I feel like this is, how do I say this nicely? Feelings getting in the way of what is actually best right now, right here for your career.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Dunk. The one thing I will say is we haven't seen enough of Davis Alexander to make that assessment. But if you treat all other things as equal between him and Trey Ford in terms of the potential and the investment from their franchises, the one thing that Ford has that Davis Alexander doesn't is a history of injury. And so you might say that makes it a slightly more attractive situation for Fajardo to go to Edmonton over what I agree is another good situation in Montreal, just because that might open the door to be on the field, even if the quarterback ahead of you is playing well.
I also think you're a lot less likely to take hits in Montreal's offense as a quarterback than you are in Edmonton's offense. Obviously, we don't yet know exactly what Jordan Maksimek's offense will look like at Edmonton. I'd imagine the run game will stay the same with Steven Searles being in charge of it from 2025 onward to 2020, or from 2024 onward to 2025. But I mean, Jason Moss, he doesn't like to run the ball. He throws the ball a ton, but so much of his passing game is short. It is first read. It is quick hit. That is not Jordan Maksimek's offense at all. Historically, Jordan Maksimek's offense is wait and you wait and you go through your reads and you try to hit those intermediate and deep passing routes. And I think JC makes a very astute point. Trey Ford, in not that many starts in his career, has gotten hurt multiple times, right? He is not a big man. He's not tiny, right? He's, you know, 5'11 and a half, close to 6 feet, might even be exactly 6 feet. Not sure he is without shoes on, but he's 6 foot. And at the combine, I think he weighed 199 pounds. I'd suspect he's maybe playing a couple pounds below that right now. Obviously, he's the most athletic quarterback in the CFL. He routinely makes defenders look stupid, taking wrong angles, right? Outrunning everybody. But that style of game poses risk. So if you're Ed Hervey, I think this is a win for Ed Hervey, it should be said, the GM in Edmonton. He's now got two quarterbacks who have proven they can win games in this league, and he will probably need both. He said as much in the press release. We believe in having two quarterbacks, and I think at some point, both Trey Ford and Cody Fajardo will start games for the Edmonton Elks in 2025, assuming, of course, that a deal gets done for Cody Fajardo, which I suspect will happen.
Guys, let's look at it from this standpoint. if you're Davis Alexander or Trey Ford, and I don't necessarily want to think of them together, but we can split them up. How do you feel about your team committing to a veteran backup who has been a consistent and, dare I say, high-level starter in this league? Cody Fajardo obviously having won the Grey Cup MVP, McLeod Bethel-Thompson having led the Argos to the Grey Cup in 2022.
I mean, I think there's probably some sense of disappointment in a way, which I don't think is completely unfair. That being said, I don't think that feeling should last long, because at the end of the day, GMs, personnel staffs, their job is to put the team in as good a position to be successful as possible. And part of that success is having multiple quarterbacks who can win you games. And I think by wiping the slate clean, so to speak, you know, you don't have fans in Montreal who are still, you know, in love and obsessed with Cody Fajardo for what he accomplished for them in 2023, who are going to be clamoring for him to play the first time Davis Alexander throws a pick. And conversely, you've got a fresh, clean slate now for Cody Fajardo and Trey Ford to build a relationship. I don't think that Trey Ford and McLeod Bethel-Thompson had any animosity towards one another this past year, but I've been led to believe that they did not have a particularly close or strong relationship. So with Cody Fajardo coming in as the number two, it's possible that he knows, hey, look, I'm here. Hopefully, I mean, I'm sure in Cody Fajardo's mind, he's going to be a starter somewhere in 2026. But if he comes in with the opportunity in 2025 to be the best mentor he can be, potentially get into some games, show that he's still got it, potentially try to hit a home run of a contract for the following year, then I think he's going to be in a better position to mentor Trey Ford than maybe McLeod Bethel-Thompson was in 2024 when he came in as the guy. So yes, I can see there maybe being a sense of disappointment from both guys, but let's also call a spade a spade. Like Davis Alexander started four games. You're saying that not only are you good enough that you should be the starter, but your team shouldn't even be worried about who the backup is? Like, come on. Like, that is asking too much too soon. So I get maybe a little bit of disappointment in the moment, but are you really surprised? I mean, if I'm Saskatchewan right now, I'm trying to upgrade my backup behind Trevor Harris. If I'm Winnipeg, I'm trying to upgrade my backup behind Zach Kolaris. And these are two teams who made deep playoff runs this past year. Heck, I would argue that you know, Toronto only won the Grey Cup because they had a backup who could come in and play well. If they didn't have that, they'd be sitting home right now with one less ring on their fingers, so to speak. So I don't think that they should feel disappointed long-term whatsoever.
Yeah, if you are disturbed or upset because your team has gone out and acquired a quality backup quarterback, you are in the wrong line of work. You are in the wrong profession. You know that in this league, in all likelihood, whether it's one or two games here or, you know, God forbid, a longer stretch because of a more serious injury, you are going to need multiple guys to win in this league. We've seen it time and time again. I think both of these quarterbacks should welcome this situation because their teams have been very clear. They're going to be given every opportunity to have success, to be the franchise guys going forward. They have those assurances now, but now they have somebody who, in the worst case scenario, is still going to be able to get this team victories, to keep pushing them towards the playoffs and the ultimate goal of a Grey Cup. That should be viewed as a winning formula, not some sort of threat to these two starters.
Ultimately, guys, it's pro football. That's the answer.
Yep.
You compete, you win, you keep your job. You don't, you get questioned. Perhaps somebody else comes into the football game. And I would hope that even though Trey Ford and Davis Alexander are young, that they could understand that it's actually more beneficial for the team to have a competent backup in case, as you guys kind of alluded to, if they get nicked and have to miss a game here or potentially more, that person can come in and keep the team alive to go to the playoffs or potentially more. The other point to this that I really hope happens, fellas, and I think you're right about the relationships changing and that they could be more beneficial, because let's not forget here, okay? For as much as Cody Fajardo might be feeling some type of way about the Alouettes' decision to go with Davis Alexander, well, who was the guy in the quarterback room helping him along to even get to that point where he was a quarterback that made four starts, went 4-0, that led a second half comeback against the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Technically, I think he should be 5-0. That's discussion for another day, quarterback win-loss stats. But let's give Cody Fajardo some credit for that. And perhaps he can actually be a real boost to Trey Ford as much as Cody Fajardo wants to be in a position to be a starter. That, though, to me, is really intriguing because clearly Cody Fajardo, as what was it, Nevada Sportsnet?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Had on their website, he believes he's still a starter in this league. So that's the reason that he's going to Edmonton. He feels like that is his best path to getting back to being QB1 in the CFL, at least in 2025. Now, a couple other offshoots from this. I think that, in my opinion, this paves the way for Jake Mayer to go to the Saskatchewan Roughriders. From what I was told, he was number two on the Elks list in terms of backup quarterbacks that they wanted. I just see such an ideal fit there with Mark Mueller, the offensive coordinator, and Jake Mayer being young with some upside. We can go there, sort of rehabilitate, let's call it, for a year, and then come out on the other side, depending what Trevor Harris does. Perhaps he's in a starting position again, but I think that Trevor Harris and Jake Mayer elevates the Riders' quarterback position, to your point, Hodge. And you threw a little bit of shade there. You didn't name him, but a Chris Streveler. You think the Bombers need to go up and upgrade from Streveler? Who are they going to get, big man?
I think I've said it on this show. I think Chris Streveler is a sensational football player. Chris Streveler is not a starting quarterback. Like, that is true of Taysom Hill, who I'd put in that category. So, yeah, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers should work to retain Chris Streveler. They also need to upgrade their backup quarterback spot. I think those things are simultaneously true. The other thing I'll add about Cody Fajardo, at the tail end of his tenure in Saskatchewan, Cody got a little bit poopy pantsy. He got a little bit pity party-y. He got a little bit whiny. And then he showed up in Montreal and was a model citizen talking about how much he loved the city. He was learning French. I remember him saying that eggs are called œufs, which is correct, according to my sixth grade French, which is terrible, admittedly. I am expecting, and by the way, Cody already released a classy statement on his Twitter feed, which I would encourage everybody to check out. We quoted it in our article. But I'm expecting that by the time he gets to Edmonton, and maybe even long before that, he's going to be Mr. Edmonton, and all of the maybe hurt feelings that were there at the start will have dissipated, and he will be Mr. Edmonton. I don't know what... What do you do in Edmonton? JC, you're a native Edmontonian. What is like the classic thing? Like, oh, all Edmontonians do this. Yeah, he'll be at the mall every day. Y'all been to the mall? Let's go to the mall.
Connor McDavid like Mark Killam did. Check out an Oilers game.
There you go.
Jasper's not too far away. Come on, man. You're dissing all these other cities that aren't the Peg, Hodge.
I'm not dissing Edmonton. I'm just questioning what is the obviously Montreal is smoked meat and, you know, French and all that stuff. What is Edmonton? I'm just asking the question.
There's a lot of Donair in Edmonton, although that's Halifax's thing.
But yeah, that's true.
White Ave, isn't that the hot spot?
Yeah, that's one.
Fred DeBred would tell us all about White Ave, eh, boys?
Very young. But
of course, Fred DeBred would. He'd also tell us about Lenny, which is a story for another story for
Super
another
inside
day.
Jokes, yeah.
But by the way, I'm not talking everybody down but the Peg, because if someone comes to the Peg, they'd be talking about sketchy downtowns and mosquitoes. So,
what about the Forks, bro?
The Forks is awesome. The Forks is beautiful. We also do this thing in Winnipeg. This is a brief Winnipeg tangent, by the way. My apologies to non-Winnipeggers. But we do this thing where right in the heart of the city, there's a set of rail yards that is huge. It's acres big. And I remember being a kid, and every two, 3 years, the front page of the paper would be a politician asking about whether or not we should move the rail yards. And it being we can't do it. It's going to cost $50 million. Being wow, that's a lot of money. And every 2-3 years, the same article would get written, only the quote for how much it would cost to move them would get up. And lately, last week, the same article got written, the 2024 version, and it's it's going to cost $180 million to move the rail yards. And it's well, Maybe if we'd done it 20, like the question is, should the middle of your city have a giant, mostly unused ancient rail yard where there could be like houses and businesses and amenities? I think the answer is very obviously no. But for some reason, every 2-3 years, we ask the same question and then do literally nothing about it. So could we just rip the Band-Aid off, move the rail yards, build some cool stuff that people will want to come and see, and maybe we'll make our money back at some point instead of having a giant waste of space in the middle of the city that doesn't need to be there? Because the Forks, which everybody loves, up until it was built like 30 years ago, was mostly unused rail yards. Like, we turned a negative into a giant positive that everyone in hindsight is like, I'm so glad we did this. Why can't we just do it again? But whatever. I don't, maybe I'll run for city council one day.
Welcome.
That's
to
not that much money though. That's like Randy Ambrosi federal government kind of cash.
Yeah,
not
really exactly.
That much. You just got to ask for it. You'll get it.
You just got to ask
without for a financial plan.
Yeah, that yeah. worked out great for the commission.
Really did. Anyway, I digress.
What would you put there, Hodge?
Well, Winnipeg doesn't have a water park, a year-round water park, like an affordable.
Like what's in Edmonton's mall, bro? You ever been to the water park there?
Yeah.
I have.
It's been a very long time, but yes, I have been there. In Winnipeg, there is currently no, other than like the city-run indoor pools, some of which have like a token, like water slide kind of thing, but like there's no like indoor, like cool.
You want a slide for a big man to go down that's sturdy.
Well, I don't know if I would go on it.
A little bit.
How do you tan indoors? What are you talking about?
Bro, still sun out in the winter.
In November in Winnipeg,
you are tanning?
Well, JC lives in Vancouver, so he's actually never seen the sun. We're waiting for JC to see it one day. But in Winnipeg,
it's the thing behind the clouds.
I'll put it this way. Right? It would be great for parents and families and for kids in the city to have a cool, like, athletic thing to do in the wintertime when it's too cold outside. So, like, having a water park that people could go to with, like, a wave pool area and some water slides and stuff would be great. We don't have one. Winnipeg is going to be a city. I think we're on track to hit 1 million people in the urban area of Winnipeg in something like 8 years. So, like, if you're a city of 1 million people and you don't have an indoor water park, like, what are you even doing? So, yeah, build it. Build it.
If you're keeping score while you're watching or listening, Hodge dissed Edmonton, and then he wants Winnipeg to do what Edmonton has already done or had for the last however many years, and that's have a mall with a water park in it.
I didn't diss Edmonton. And by the way, I Googled, what is Edmonton known for? And the top thing that came up was, Edmonton is known as Canada's festival city and hosts over 50 unique festivals each year. I'm sorry, has anybody ever called Edmonton the festival city?
No.
Even
what?
One time?
Edmonton Folk Fest is legit.
There is no way that Edmonton has more festivals than Toronto, though.
I would imagine that that is.
Just by the sheer population. Yeah, maybe by per capita.
Would people think Edmonton, you're right, there's the mall, which I have been to multiple times, and there's the fact that the Oilers were good 35 years ago.
Bro, what are you talking about? We were at Connor McDavid's game where he scored 60, his 60th goal.
Yeah.
And they went to the cup final. Yeah,
and they were good last year.
Come on.
After, and they went like 20 years ago, too.
It wasn't that hard for Gretzky. He won a bunch of them.
Yeah, he won 1 million of them.
Fair. McDavid, you listening, bud? Mark Killam, tell your boy McDavid to win some cups.
Since we're on this topic, I saw the most amazing stat the other day. I forget the hockey player's name, so I'm just going to call him John Doe. But I saw a graphic that somebody made where it was like, John Doe is making his return to the lineup tonight. And I don't even think it was the Oilers. It was some random team. And then I went, he is only 861 goals behind Wayne Gretzky for the NHL's all-time lead. And I just burst out laughing. It was the most random thing. But hey, I'm here for random Twitter graphics. Stop giving me things that just make sense. Let's have some fun. Right? Just post. Post ridiculous stuff. Maybe we'll start doing it at 3 down. You know, Cody Fajardo is only 42,000 passing yards behind Ricky Ray's all-time franchise lead at Edmonton. Maybe we'll post that. Why not?
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's keep it moving here, boys. The Canadian Football League Players Association released its first ever team report cards, grading franchises over eight different categories. 495 players filled out a 58-question survey over a two-week period in October, with the final grades being processed by an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia. Saskatchewan and Hamilton had the best combined grades, while Edmonton, BC, and surprise, surprise, Calgary were at the bottom. What did you take away from the results?
I thought that the results were super interesting. I got this list under embargo from the CFLPA on Monday, so I had a little bit of time to kind of dig into and process these things before they went live. Only two A's. The two A's went to Saskatchewan and Hamilton, respectively, for football operations and equipment. There were also two Fs. Both went to the Elks, one in the category of nutrition and diet, the other for training camp. I will say one downside of this process is I do think that organizations take the blame for stuff that happened like a long time ago. Like, for instance, again, as Dunk said, the surveys were completed in October. So you've got guys looking back at training camp, which at that point is like 4 months ago. And these surveys were also filled out 2 months after the person who ran Edmonton's training camp got fired. So in a way, you're kind of bashing the current Edmonton Elks for decisions that were made by other people.
You're grading the season, though.
But it is.
And that's fair.
And yes. And I did ask interim executive director of the CFLPA, Peter Diakowski, like, are you sure this is the best time to do it? And he said, well, I think so, because part of this purpose is to inform free agents where they might choose to play, right? Maybe where they want to play for the following season. So if you're a free agent who, you know, maybe you've got two offers that financially are very similar, you say, well, do I want to go and play in a place like Hamilton and Saskatchewan where they treat people really well, or do I want to go to BC or Edmonton? The other thing he said is it can also serve as a point of questioning for a pending free agent. Like, let's say they get offered a really nice deal to go to Edmonton. Well, they can say to the Elks, hey, well, last year you graded an F in nutrition and food. What have you done to rectify that? And Edmonton can say, oh, well, these are the, you know, the three or the four steps that we've taken to improve, and this is what our new system is going to look like. So that all makes a lot of sense. I will also commend the CFLPA for going about this the right way. I know that the CFL was not thrilled about this process. After the PA announced it at Grey Cup, Diakowski told me that four teams almost immediately reached out asking how they did, and they seemed a little bit concerned about it. I will also say,
well, then be better.
Well, and we'll get there. I will also say some people have said, well, you know, I'd be curious to hear the team's perspective. I reached out to all nine CFL teams for comment. None did. One person replied only to say that they were informed by the CFL that they were not allowed to comment. And then when I reached out to the league office, they said they're not commenting. So nobody in
That's
or around
joke.
The league, which is
an
a joke,
absolute joke.
But the point is, if someone is looking at this report card and saying, well, this is just the PA's perspective, I want to hear from the teams. The teams and the league all got a chance to reply to this, and none of them did. At the end of the day, this is a good opportunity for teams to improve things. The PA was very clear that they only highlighted negatives that can realistically be fixed on a CFL budget. This was not players saying, well, I want a solid gold locker room and a toilet that's made out of diamonds. No, this is not the NFL. We know that that's not realistic. These are all CFL things that can be fixed. I think this is a smart move by the PA. Like, for instance, every wife knows this. If you're hosting a party and you want your husband to do something, or I'll put it this way. If you want your husband to do something around the house, you just have to host a major event or a party and it'll get done, right? Because if the towel rack has been loose for 4 months, it often doesn't get fixed until about an hour before the company gets there. So this is kind of the PA's way of forcing the team's hand and saying, hey, our players have been going through the proper channels for years, complaining about the terrible airplane that you fly on, or the fact that there's no hot food available at breakfast time, or the fact that after home games, we have to pay for our own food, or that, hey, I need athletic therapy after practice, and there are literally not enough therapists to help everybody who is seeking treatment, right? And so by doing this publicly, in a way that I think is very fair, this, I think, is more likely to lead to actual positive change, because we all know we've had bosses at work who don't really care about your working conditions until suddenly the shareholders learn something negative, or maybe customers learn something negative. And all of a sudden, something that was completely impossible to fix for years gets fixed overnight. We saw that in the NFLPA report card that started in 2023, had its second edition come out in 2024. And I think we're going to see some changes happen heading into 2025.
Yeah, that will be the big thing for me. It's not necessarily how teams grade out in this report card. That's interesting information. There's lots of fodder for discussion there. But where the rubber meets the road will be in 2025, when we get the second edition and we see how these grades changed, which organizations took their players' comments seriously and actually looked to address some of their concerns. I think that's what's going to differentiate the best organizations from the ones that struggle the most. To me, you know, there's some big winners from these report cards early on. I think Hamilton is the one that stands out for me, getting that high a grade, despite not necessarily having a large amount of success on the field the last few years. That might have an influence in helping them attract some talent this upcoming season. And then BC, I think, is the big loser. And we do have to touch on them a little bit, because we knew the situation in Edmonton was rough and there's going to be changes that happen there with new ownership. We all knew the situation in Calgary. I think BC hasn't been maybe given enough attention for some of the stuff that their players have to deal with in terms of the subpar training facility out here, because we've all been taken by Amar Doman and the investment that he has made in terms of the marketing of the club and things like that. But it's clear that there is more that needs to be done, that there are other areas of the team that he needs to invest in. And the team the players have made that very clear with their grades. And it should be noted, the team had basically one positive grade, the B-, and what was that, team and management, or the front coaching and management. Is that the top category? And part of that category has now been changed, right? Because Rick Campbell is no longer with the team. They have had a leadership change in that organization. So even their positive grade, there's a potential for movement there one way or the other. I think the Lions are in a very precarious situation in terms of these report card grades and some of the changes that they need to make as an organization if they want to rebuild this thing.
Fellas, I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to answer either yes or no. Okay. Does this sound like professional football to you? Players needing to get their own gym memberships?
No.
To get a real workout? No. No. Okay. Does this sound like professional football to you? We touched on this already. Players needing to pay for their own food on a home game day?
No.
No.
Does this sound like professional football to you? When told that I needed surgery, there was little to no effort in getting a doctor to coordinate a surgery date?
No.
No. Okay. Point proven. This, and I want to try to say this nicely and balanced. Okay, because the players in this league deserve better treatment. And on the flip side of this, teams have the ability to fine players, release players before offseason roster bonuses. We're going to see it here in the offseason. Release players in season. Reichwald Armstead, hello, for some, let's say, bogus reason that's not actually the real reason behind the scenes, because the teams don't want to talk about it. So I think this was done actually in a professional way by the Canadian Football League Players Association. not taking shots, not necessarily putting out all of the negative quotes about the teams, but saying, hey, you guys need to be better. We've told you about this stuff behind the scenes for years and years. Oh, I forgot one more. Should professional football players, or does this sound like professional football? Players having to buy their own cleats and gloves.
No.
So when teams are out here, you know, wielding the hammer, so to speak, and players can be released for anything, or they can be fined behind the scenes and, you know, be treated this way. We're talking about treatment in the workplace, which has been a hot topic in our world now for a number of years. And it absolutely should be the same in professional football. The answer is simple. Be better. I'm not saying that these teams are not going to go about being better now, but the real question here, to JC's point, is why were they not better before this information became public? Because the CFL likes to keep a lot of things secretive, but the fact that this has now come out, I think actually is going to benefit everybody because the players are going to be treated more like professionals. They put out a great product on the football field despite these circumstances. Think about that. You're a professional football player. I'm not saying this is one team, but you don't have a gym to work out in, to get a real workout in. You got to pay for your own cleats and gloves. You don't have adequate meals provided for you. I know it's a hot topic in Calgary, but in other places too. And there's not enough trainers to see you when you want to get treatment. And this is supposed to be professional football. Like, guys, the other thing too that I want to say is we are not perfect at 3downnation.com. No. But we hold ourselves to a high standard, okay? And we do elicit feedback from our listeners, viewers, people in the league who are willing to share. I don't want to necessarily speak for you guys, but I tell people all the time, if you see something that you don't like or you disagree with, we want to hear the feedback so it keeps us balanced. So I hope, and to JC's point, that the CFL teams that did not rank very well in some of these categories or overall improve for next year. But I just don't understand why this had to be made public for it to happen. And I don't understand why, Hodge, credit to you for reaching out to all the teams and the league office. The league office or the teams just couldn't say, you know, based on their grades. Let's say it was, who was last? Edmonton?
Yeah.
Combined grades? Let's say it was Edmonton. Why couldn't they send something back to you and say, look, we've seen the grades. We are working to make our workplace a better environment for our players. Like, wouldn't that at least say that they've acknowledged it and that they want to get better? It's simple stuff here, guys.
Well, and that has apparently been communicated to the players, because one of the comments that a player wrote was them saying, we've been promised a lot with new ownership. So obviously there have been things communicated to the players about, like, well, this is going to improve, that's going to improve. I do take one huge issue with something a player at Edmonton wrote. They wrote, quote, cold pizza isn't good enough. And I just want to stress that in my personal opinion, cold pizza is 1,000% good enough. It's not only good enough, it is exceptional. I adore cold pizza. That being said, I appreciate the fact that I'm not a professional athlete. So I guess the barometer there is maybe a little bit different. Fair enough. But I do want to highlight one thing that Peter Diakowski said, which I do think is very legitimate. And the quote is, because I asked, you know, how responsive were the players? And by the way, 495 players. That's an average of, we don't know the exact breakdown of how many replied per team, but that's an average of 55 per team. For the record, in the NFL in 2023, when they did their first report card, they only had 41 respondents per team. So there is a very wide variety of feedback. This is not a small sample size. This is a lot of players who filled this out. Pete said players really enjoyed the opportunity to provide feedback and, quote, because they could speak freely. Sometimes it's a little bit uncomfortable voicing your concerns in a highly, highly competitive workplace like ours, because sometimes the difference between you and the next guy vying for your job might be kind of slim and you don't want to tilt the scales, close quote. So I do think that having a collective opportunity this way is smart, because if you're the guy who is always whining that there's no hot water in the shower, or you're the guy who's always complaining that there are, you know, the cleats aren't good enough or whatever else, it can put a target on your back. And I'll invite people to look, by the way, over the history of who the CFLPA rep has been, because there is one particular city, not that he's still the coach there anymore, but there was one team in the CFL who every year, for I believe it was a period of 5 years in a row, cut or traded their CFLPA rep because they were the ones always coming to the team and saying, hey, you're practicing too long, or you're not adhering to the padded practice rules, or you are breaking the CBA here or there.
That's got to be obvious who it
else.
Is, right?
Yeah, it's probably pretty obvious. But regardless, the point is players are putting themselves at risk, or they at the very least feel they are putting themselves at risk by complaining, even privately, even if it is through the proper channel. So having an opportunity like this to respond in a kind of pseudo-anonymous way, I do think is beneficial for them. And hopefully the CFL teams take note. I know that if I was in charge of a CFL team, whether I was an owner, a team president, some other former general manager, somebody in a front office, if I was not scoring in the number one spot, my goal would be, okay, what can we realistically do? Obviously, you don't have tens of millions of dollars to change things, but what can we realistically do to get into that top spot? Because I, just like the actual standings, want to be on top of these standings too. I want to not just be the best team. I want to provide the best opportunities for our players, provide the best opportunities for our fans. By the way, I wonder what a fan survey would look like if fans were given the opportunity to say, hey, this is what we get as perks for being a season ticket holder. And this was the last time the team called me to check in on how I feel about the team. This is the last time that I went to the team store. This is what they had available. This is what the pricing was, right? Those types of things would be very interesting to look at too. Now, we don't have a CFL fan union, but maybe we will someday. Who knows?
Hodge, there's a project for you in 2025.
Yeah, just reaching out to every single CFL fan. I'll get right on it. Easy peasy.
Sometimes it feels like our Twitter DMs are like that, but
it does.
A little bit. Fellas, before we move on, I just want to highlight a couple things here, okay? Can you imagine Willie Jefferson trying to get into this tiny plane, apparently, that the Blue Bombers have?
Apparently, it's a cargo plane. I had somebody tell me.
Hodge, the big fella's like an NBA basketball player.
This is the story we need. Hodge on the Bombers plane. Let's get him on there for one of their away
trips. Yes, give us your opinion.
A full expose on the plane. Let's go.
I will say I've talked to players about the way the plane works, and coaches and veteran players are each given, and I don't think it's the same plane exactly each away game, but they're given a row to themselves. And then once they run out of rows and players have to share, it goes like by seniority and it goes by position. So if you're a lineman, even if you're a rookie, you're more likely to get a row to yourself than you are if you're like a DB who's a rookie. So I don't know how many guys actually have to share, but if it's a cargo plane with no leg room and it's a situation where a lot of people have to share, yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. I'm 6'2". I do not like to fly in a regular airplane seat, much less beside someone who is football size.
Bro, some of these Bombers players talking about it's travel worse than single A baseball. Our plane is terrible and falling apart. Like, this is the team that's been to 5 straight Grey Cups, is selling out home games on the regular. And from what I hear, you know, all that merchandise is flying off the shelves there too in Winnipeg. Can we just get these guys like, you know, a decent operational plane that people don't feel like is going to fall apart in the air? Let's sort of couple this with some positive aspects, because JC noted it, but I think we should delve into it a little more. Hamilton really stood out. You know, you look at the anonymous quotes, which I do like in the sense because it gives the players a chance to speak freely. Organized and professional. Sounds like professional football. Free EV charging at the facility. Sounds like professional football. An exclusive family section, in stadium during games would be nice. Families and wives are spread over multiple different rows and sections. It would be nice to have them section and sit together. But like underneath the stadium, I do think that there is a decent amount of space that the Ticats create, especially where people run through, where families can be. So I think that's actually pretty good. Another one, very organized and professional. One of the best organizations I've played for. Hamilton Tiger Cats have been absolutely phenomenal in how they treat players and their families. I'm blown away by their classiness, especially to the families of players. Like, let's not get it twisted here. We really, you know, talked about some of the negative comments, but that's the standard. It's very clear to me from the combined grades that Hamilton and Saskatchewan are setting the standards. And from the quotes, it seems like it's the Tiger Cats far and away. Now, ideally, that translates to success because the Tiger Cats have the longest Grey Cup drought in the league going all the way back to 1999. I know nobody over there wants to hear it, but it's the truth. It is great to hear that feedback, though. So that's the standard that these other teams need to strive to reach to treat their players at least professionally in a professional football league.
Well, and I mean, we should move on, but I do want to quickly reiterate a little bit what JC said, which I thought was very astute, is that this is also, as a member of the media, dispelled some myths, right? A lot of times we just say, well, Amar Doman is an amazing owner. And that's probably true. But BC scored very close to the bottom of this list, yeah. Right? And another thing,
I think if Amar Doman, though, like to balance that, could have a practice facility set up somewhere, fair. Like he would probably fair, do fair, that, fair. Right?
It's something he has talked about in the past of trying to get the tires on. But, and it's desperately needed, clearly based on this, because I think the comment from one player was like, look, the team's doing the best it can. It physically cannot do more with the facility it currently has.
And there are aspects of it I'm in full agreement with you. The team also scored a D- in nutrition and diet, though. That is nothing to do with the fact that your practice facility is in a sketchy neighborhood in Surrey. They also got a D for family treatment. That has nothing to do with the fact that your practice facility is in a lousy neighborhood in Surrey. So I agree with you to an extent. The other thing, and I don't see this in the media a lot, I see this a lot from fans on Twitter, is them saying things like, well, MLSE doesn't care about the Toronto Argonauts, or why would they invest money in the Toronto Argonauts? When I talk to members of the Toronto Argonauts in that front office, they tell me that they had full support of MLSE through the pandemic. Everybody got paid. Ryan Dinwiddie said it at Grey Cup. I asked for one treadmill. They gave me four. Like, they scored middle of the pack. They got a B- overall. That's not like a grade you run home with on your report card to show your parents because you're so excited. But that is fifth of nine teams. Like, MLSE, by all accounts, by the actual reporting that's been done, is a perfectly fine CFL owner. Are there things they could do better? Of course. There's things that every owner could do better. But what I'm saying is, if before this report card had come out, you'd said, well, who's doing a better job owning and operating a CFL team? Is it BC or Toronto? I think everybody would have said, oh, BC by the sun, the moon, the stars. That is not what has been reflected by the players. So as a member of the media, I appreciate that this is an extra tool for us to get a better sense maybe of what's going on. And as the years progress, we'll get a chance to see how these scores develop.
And the biggest takeaway from this all, fellas, is did you notice the highest training camp score? And why?
Well, I mean,
the Toronto Argonauts hold their training camp at the University of Guelph.
Oh, God.
Oh, come on.
I was wondering where you're going with this. At the end of the day,
the takeaway is Chris Jones should never be allowed to run a training camp again.
I will say the training camp, the training camp category
breaking all them rules
is a little bit off to me just because players are going to hate training camp no matter what, but whatever. B+ is a good grade for training camp. That is.
I just hope we get an opportunity.
It should be A+.
Over the
Those
next...
facilities are amazing. Are you kidding me? Barbershop in the locker room, touchscreen TVs, light up locker stalls. Like, what else do you want, man? State of the art workout facility right there. Come on.
Well, hey, McMahon Stadium got electricity 3 years ago, so they're catching up.
Is there running water there?
Some days. I'm just kidding. I clown on McMahon. It's not that bad. I'm also, by the way, hoping to see McMahon up close and personal this upcoming season, but I can't plan anything yet because there is no CFL schedule. I'm told the schedule might not even be out until after the holiday season, which I don't think fans want to know, but I was told that by a CFL spokesperson on Tuesday.
Bruh, come on.
Three teams have welcomed new defensive coordinators just over the last week, as Brent Monson was officially hired in Hamilton, William Fields was hired in Ottawa, and Bob Slowick was promoted in Calgary. Which hiring do you view as being the most impactful?
I'm intrigued to see how they all play out, but for me, the most interesting one both in terms of the narrative and the potential for the franchise and the coach is Brent Monson in Hamilton. Of course, we saw the reports early in the season that he was going to end up with the Toronto Argonauts. That apparently fell through due to a contractual impasse, potentially related to the football operations cap. Now he ends up down the QEW in Hamilton. And this is a guy, yes, the Calgary defense the last couple of seasons has not been that good, but at one point it was viewed as an elite unit in the CFL. He has had some really successful seasons as a coach. I think he has more in the tank. And the Hamilton Tiger Cats defense did take a step forward over the second half of last season when Chris Jones was inserted there. Brent Monson can take another step again with some of the talent that they have, make some of his own tweaks. I think that is a team that is potentially cresting towards success in 2025. And this hire is the most intriguing part of it to me.
The Monson Toronto that Hamilton thing is interesting. The way it's been explained to me is that Monson still had a year left on his contract with the Calgary Stampeders. And the Argos were like, hey, come be our defensive coordinator for, let's say, a way smaller amount of money than would be usual to pay a defensive coordinator in this league. And apparently the Stampeders are like, no, we're not going to pay you to be a defensive coordinator for another team, essentially, or pay the majority of your contract. So that's how it's been explained to me, which kind of does make sense. The ink was never actually put on that contract in Toronto, which is part of the reason why he's ended up in Hamilton. I just can't understand, you know, why, if the Argos really wanted him then, they just wouldn't turn around and say, okay, well, you know, we'll pay you whatever we're supposed to pay you for this to be able to happen. Because now, as we've seen, William Fields, that's been reported, going to Ottawa to be a defensive coordinator, no more a co-defensive coordinator. So we'll see what he can do on his own there and the defensive staff that he brings. But if you're, let's say, and there's still a process to play out here, Kevin Iben in Toronto, what's that conversation like with Ryan Dinwiddie?
Awkward. That is, I want to talk about William Fields. I'll talk a little bit about Bob Slowick first, since it seems like neither of you guys are going to do it. Bob Slowick, 30 years of NFL experience, was out of coaching for a while, came to the CFL in 2019 with Montreal Alouettes, is now getting the chance at age 70 to be a CFL defensive coordinator for the first time. I'm interested to see what that's going to look like. But I'm thrilled for William Fields that he gets the chance to do this. I talked to William Fields at length at Grey Cup. Super nice guy. He cited Jerry Glanville as not just his mentor, but like a father figure to him. They spent 1 year together in Hamilton in 2018. He said they still talk on the phone basically every single day. He was the co-defensive coordinator in Toronto this past season with Kevin Iben, and that defense was incredible. I mean, they had the second most takeaways in the CFL. They had the most sacks. They made Winnipeg's offense look terrible in two regular season meetings. And then guess what? Did it again in the Grey Cup. 4 picks off Zach Kolaris. Yes, some of them had to do a little bit with circumstance, the injury, but whatever. 4 picks is 4 picks. And that defense was the reason the Toronto Argonauts won the Grey Cup. Yes, Nick Arbuckle had a good game. Yes, Kadeem Carey's a heck of a running back. But at the end of the day, that co-defensive coordinator spot, which when I pressed Ryan Dinwiddie on it, basically the way he described it was, well, if William's calling the plays really well, he keeps calling them. If Kevin's calling the plays real well, he keeps calling them. And then if we need to switch it up, we switch it up. So like, it seems like they both were true defensive coordinators.
Who called the first play though? That's probably the defensive coordinator.
I was led to believe that changes depending on the week. Kevin Iben being more of a front 7 or front 6 guy and William Fields being more of a secondary guy. But at the end of the day, I do think it would have been a little bit of a slap in the face to both of these guys to be like, so we just won you a Grey Cup. What are you going to do? And Ryan's like, well, I'm hiring Brent Monson because we were together in Calgary together, you know, a bunch of years ago. And so I'm replacing both of you guys. Like, it's like, what? We just won a Grey Cup and Calgary's defense finished last in a whole bunch of categories in 2024. So good for William Fields. I'm also interested to see what effect this could have on free agency, because if you are Deshaun Amos, for instance, and you have now spent a bunch of years working with William Fields. Do you want to follow him to Ottawa? If you're Tunde Adeleke, who had a bit of a renaissance season, do you want to follow to Ottawa, a place where, of course, Tunde Adeleke played U Sports football at Carleton University? There are opportunities. I mean, Darius Pickett's already in Ottawa, albeit as a free agent. Wynn McManus, I'm sure he worked more with Kevin Iben than William Fields. But if I'm Ottawa, whose secondary was miserable a year ago, I can't think of a better person to fix that, because the front was excellent in Ottawa last year. The problem was the back end defensively. So good for William Fields getting this opportunity. I think it's a match made in heaven, these two clubs. And I'm glad that Fields is getting the respect that I think he deserves.
A number of CFL players have now completed multiple NFL workouts, including Ralph Hawley, Tyrell Ford, Ajo, Elliot Brown, Jake Julian, and Mekhi Polk, among others. Who is the most likely of that group to garner an NFL contract?
You know, it's not the sexy answer, fellas, but it has to be Jake Julian if we're putting odds on it. I'm not saying he's going to get one, but I think that the season that he had, breaking John Ryan's record, who NFL personnel people will definitely know, that that is going to give him a lot of help to potentially sign an NFL contract. I do think some of these other guys could have a chance to as well. But, you know, fellas, I think back to last year, and Sam Emilis had some NFL workouts, and it seemed like Samuel Emilis seemed like he was trending towards signing an NFL contract, and then it didn't happen. And that kind of surprised some people in CFL circles, because I felt like the amount that he had would have usually in the past warranted an NFL contract. But, you know, as we've seen last year, for example, with Austin Mack, he had one workout with the Atlanta Falcons and signed a contract there. He didn't do any other ones on purpose, but sometimes all it takes is one. But, you know, I think the smart money would have to be on Jake Julian out of a pretty intriguing group.
I'm going to say Mekhi Polk. I thought Mekhi Polk should have won Most Outstanding Rookie this past year. All due respect to Shamar Bridges and Nick Anderson, who were the two finalists for that award, Anderson winning it. Anderson, by the way, we asked him about this at Grey Cup. He said he's only going to sign a contract if he feels like it's a legit contract. He's done one workout for the Saints so far. That's it. Polk has three. And when I see Mekhi Polk, he just looks like an NFL receiver. He is so rangy. He can separate so well. He is a bit lanky, but he has got some strength there. 6'3". He was bigger in person than I thought he would be. That was one takeaway for me at Grey Cup. Some big old mitts on him. When I see Mekhi Polk, he looks to me like an NFL receiver, and he's a guy who never really got a big NFL shot coming out of school. So I'm interested to see if he garners an opportunity. I also will echo, sorry if I'm stealing your guy, JC, Tyrell Ford, a guy who has had an NFL opportunity already, was with the Packers in 2023. He is now up to three workouts. I've been led to believe the odds of him going to the NFL seem to be climbing. I'm not saying they're 100%, but they seem to be moving up as these workouts go on.
Yeah, I think you guys have laid out my 1-2-3 in exactly that order. Jake Julian, Mekhi Polk, and then Tyrell Ford are my top three candidates. I also think there's maybe a little bit of value, and we haven't mentioned him yet, just two workouts so far, but Khalil Pimpleton, the outstanding rookie out of the Ottawa Redblacks, I don't necessarily think he's large enough to be a full-time NFL receiver, but with the way that the kickoff rules have changed in the NFL, is there potentially value to him getting an opportunity similar to what happened with Tyreek McAllister last year heading down to Las Vegas? I think Pimpleton had a cup of coffee in the NFL before he came up to Ottawa, showed some absolutely absurd game speed, can contribute as a receiver, can contribute as a returner as needed. I'm going to be interested to see how many more workouts he's able to put under his belt as we get further into this window and march towards the time when teams can actually sign these players to futures contracts in January.
It should be mentioned, Toronto Argonauts defensive lineman Ralph Hawley has had three NFL workouts. You know, I could picture him getting an NFL shot just based on his body and how athletic he is. Also, Ajoa Joe has had three, and I know he didn't have like a crazy productive season, but if you look at his background a little bit and where he's been, especially Clemson University. There was a lot of hype about him there. And I felt like he came in his rookie year, showed a couple of things, that he's physical and willing to put in the work. And the guy is ultra athletic. Like, you can understand why Dabo Swinney recruited him hard to go to Clemson. So, you know, I don't necessarily want to say that he's a favorite to get an NFL contract, but I wouldn't brush that off just because he didn't have, let's say, a 1,000-yard receiving season or close to it, like a Mekhi Polk. A Joe Ajoh, when you see him physically, looks like an NFL receiver, and as much as people hate it or not, that background of at least being at Clemson, I think, could help him. And you look at the three NFL workouts already, the NFL is showing that, yeah, at least we're taking notice of this guy.
Well, and Ajoh, he turns 23 next month. That's the other thing. He is a baby. Mekhi Polk, that's another reason I picked him. He is turning 24 in August. Like, yes, he's been to an NFL camp before, but he went to camp as a rookie with the Baltimore Ravens at age 20. He turned 21 partway through that camp. So we are now seeing, especially with the COVID eligibility that some guys have been able to take advantage of, guys going to their first camps at 24, at 25. I'm pretty sure Stetson Bennett was 37 years old when he went to training camp with the Los Angeles Rams, right? Like, there are some guys who are older. So if you're bringing in Mekhi Polk at age 23, or a Joe Ajoh, who will be 23 next month, for all intents and purposes, that's the right, that's the same level guys are coming out of college with, a lot of cases. So I think that helps their opportunities as well. If you're looking to get a young guy, but who's got some pro experience already, why not look at a couple of guys like that?
It makes sense. And for the NFL teams, they want that development time, right? If you're a Joe Ajoh only turning 23 in the new year, then we know if we put a year or two into you that there's some upside there down the road. Same thing with Mekhi Polk. Oddsmakers has set the Toronto Argonauts as favorites to win the 112th Grey Cup in the Peg. Does that make sense? Or should another team be at the top?
I think it makes sense. I think the leading team for these odds should always be in the East Division, because it's easier to get to the Grey Cup through the East Division. There's less competition, right? There's three opponents versus four.
The East Division beat up the West Division, though, last year, Hodge.
Yeah, but there's fewer teams, so it's an easier path.
That's what I'm saying. You have an easier path because there are fewer teams to compete against, and the East Division was the stronger of the two divisions this past season. First time in a long time, but still. So I think it makes sense that Toronto would be at the top. I mean, they won the championship despite missing their franchise quarterback for half the year due to suspension, and then again in the playoffs, including the Grey Cup. I mean, he played most of the East Final. Regardless, I do think that Toronto should be first. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see what happens with their defensive coaching staff. I think one would assume at this point that Kevin Iben's going to be the DC, but it's certainly been an odd situation there, to say the least. I think Winnipeg probably deserves to be the number two because they've been to five in a row. It looks like they're going to run it back again in 2025. That being said, remains to be seen who the offensive coordinator will be. They do have a number of key free agents still up to bat. That being said, that's true of basically every team on this list. There are marquee free agents on all of these teams that need to sign back. So I don't think anybody should be losing sleep over Grey Cup odds in December, but I do think that these odds make a lot of sense. I think the odds are a little long for Hamilton. I think Hamilton should certainly be lower than plus 1,800. That might be a good buy if you're looking to sprinkle at this point in time, given that they have an MOP caliber quarterback. They just hired, I think, a very talented up-and-coming GM. I also think Edmonton at plus 2,200 might be a good buy. That being said, I do think there are more questions in Edmonton right now than there are potentially in Hamilton, where they have mostly an incumbent coaching staff. So we'll have to wait and see. But I do think that by and large, at least the order of these teams makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, the Argos at the top to me is a slam dunk. Defending champions, talented roster. There's nothing there that you look at it and you think these guys won't be back in the mix next season. In fact, depending on Chad Kelly's injury status and how quickly he can come back from that broken leg, they might be an improved regular season team as well. So I'm very confident that the Toronto Argonauts will deserve this front runner status. But as you pointed out, Hodge, there's some value at the back end of this list if you're a futures bettor. And to me, I am slamming the odds on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I'm putting down a boatload of money on them because I think they're going to be a much improved team next season. I love the hire of Ted Gavaya. I love how they played late in the season, the improvement we saw on defense, the resurgence of Bo Levi Mitchell. I think there's going to be a lot of potential there in year two of Scott Milanovic. And we also saw with these CFLPA rankings, they might get a little bit of a boost here in free agency in terms of attracting guys, because apparently they're setting the standard league-wide in terms of how players are treated off the field as well. That's certainly not going to change with Ted Gavaya and a quality individual like that in the building. So there's all these indicators that the Hamilton Tiger Cats are going to be much improved next season. I think at plus 1,800, that's going to be a steal odds if you think that they can make it to the Grey Cup.
Our fellas, I do believe that the Argos should be at the top, but bear with me here for a second, okay? Because there have been some people in CFL circles that have been talking about watching where Cliff Kingsbury goes. Let's say he goes to the Chicago Bears, has that relationship with Caleb Williams. Who does Cliff Kingsbury know really well?
Ryan Dinwiddie.
So, you know, let's for funsies just say right now, if Ryan Dinwiddie were to leave for an NFL job, how would that impact the Argos' odds in 2025?
I mean, Ryan Dinwiddie is the best head coach in the CFL, so that would greatly hurt their odds, one would think. Fortunately, they've retained Kevin Iben, who theoretically would be the next man up. I mean, he wasn't even the DC last year, and then they tried to replace him, but I think he is somebody who, I mean, heck, talking to Kevin Iben is just like talking to Mike O'Shea. They played beside each other for like 8 years in Toronto. I think Kevin Iben could be a great CFL head coach. But yes, obviously that would hurt them. I'm curious, how realistic do you think that is, Dunk, that Ryan Dinwiddie could leave for the NFL this offseason?
Yeah, I'm kind of just throwing it out for fun because we're talking odds here and stuff. But, you know, there have been some people talking about it. When you look at Ryan Dinwiddie's resume, as you said, he's been an outstanding CFL head coach. He's led his team to the Grey Cup two of the last three seasons with different quarterbacks and roster constructions and the rest. Some of the players have been the same, though, excuse me, like a Wynton McManus. So it's kind of like, you know, what else is there for you to prove here? Mm-hmm. And like what I've been saying to some people is, well, similar situation to Mark Trestman. He won some Grey Cups, became the head coach of the Chicago Bears. Now that probably doesn't necessarily help Ryan Dinwiddie with the way it went. I don't think it was a complete disaster. But it not going well perhaps gives teams pause down there from having that jump. Mark Trestman did have an NFL background, which I think helped him. But I'm saying, like, there have been teams that have shown interest in Ryan Dinwiddie from the NFL in the past. And if you connect those dots, it does make some sense. So that's some informed speculation. I don't want to put a percentage on it. The team to me that I think is misplaced here in terms of the odds, are the BC Lions. Like, how are they in front of the Saskatchewan Roughriders after the Riders whooped their butt in a de facto playoff game in October and then did it again in the West semifinal? And they have a new, with all due respect, unproven head coach in Buck Pierce, and they're still trying to figure out some of the other pieces, the coaching staff. Like, how would you have the Riders behind the Lions? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, to me, that is the fascinating one here on this list. And it's the balance between, okay, believing that Nathan Rourke can be that guy from 2022, because if he can be, that lifts all ships, right? He can be the piece that absolutely elevates your entire franchise and gets you into Grey Cup contention just on his own, with irrespective of any other pieces. But there's so much uncertainty about what happened with him last year, and a new chapter for this organization with, as you said, a first-time head coach in Buck Pierce. I'd be tempted to put them a lot lower on this list until I see what's coming in free agency and what changes are going to take place.
I liked your idea, JC, of looking at the longer shots, the Edmonton Elks. Like, they have pretty good quarterback situation with Trey Ford and Cody Fajardo, who's been a Grey Cup MVP, by the way. Some up-and-comers on defense. The offensive line played pretty well last year, as Hodge has reported. Steven Sorrells is going to come back there. you know, if he keeps some playmakers that Trey Ford's comfortable with or have some guys there that he's comfortable with, I don't see why they couldn't be in the mix or at least show you some value at, you know, over plus 2,000 or 2,200, wherever you get your bets at.
Yeah, and you know, we love to harp on the Calgary Stampeders on this program sometimes, but even them at plus 1,500, like, you just brought in Vernon Adams Jr., who is a massive upgrade at quarterback, a guy who can elevate your franchise, and who's been talking a lot about being a top recruiter in this league. If they can change their philosophy in free agency and VA helps them attract some talent, is that a team that gets back into the playoff mix? And I'm a little bit uncertain about that situation. I can see your face there, Doug. I think you are too, in terms of what's still existing in that building. But a quarterback can really make the difference here, specifically one that can bring in talent, and VA certainly is that.
There have been people around the league that have been saying that they think the Stamps have a bounce back year. And you mentioned VA and his recruiting. Who might be atop his list? If there was one guy that he wanted to get.
I assume you're talking about Justin McInnes.
Obviously. Avi, bro, as the kids say.
Should be noted, by the way, that John Bowman, now the defensive line coach in Calgary, is absolutely beloved by Matt Juventz, mm-hmm. who is, of course, also a pending free agent. So if you're the Calgary Stampeders and you're looking to upgrade your pass rush with a ratio breaker who has been a most outstanding defensive player in the CFL before, and you've got all kinds of money to spend, which the Stampeders should, that's someone else who I think you could probably get Vernon Adams Jr. to just put in a call for you. Hey, Matthew, how's it going? Why don't you come on down to Calgary? I just checked. We do have running water here. The electricity's working fine. The neighborhood is better than our practice facility in Surrey. We're good to go.
Just focus on, you know, going out to Banff and enjoying that, okay? Don't look at McMahon Stadium.
There you go.
How about the Three Down Nation boys, though? You know, this makes me think of, you know, that meme with the popcorn, people are eating it, like, and their eyes are getting bigger because they're entertained. Giving out the Christmas treats, fellas. The Three Down Nation listeners and viewers are like, y'all already on to free agency? Justin McInnes, Matthew Betts, what's going on?
I'm actually not on to free agency. I'm already on to next year's Labor Day Classics. That's how far ahead.
There we go.
Or I strive to be, anyway.
That's
as
when
an
the season
aside,
starts, right?
As an aside, exactly. Oh, of course, of course. As an aside, something that I was just thinking about as we were talking about these defensive coordinators, Mike O'Shea is the CFL's longest tenured head coach. Last year, he moved on to Jordan Younger as his third defensive coordinator. Dave Dickinson just hired Bob Slowick as his third defensive coordinator. Dave Dickinson is the second most tenured head coach in the CFL since 2016. Scott Milanovich, who has coached 18 games for the Ticats, is now on to his third defensive coordinator. He has been the head coach for 12 months. He has gone through the same number of defensive coordinators as Mike O'Shea and as Dave Dickinson, who combined have been in their roles for almost two decades. That's kind of wild. But hey, I guess that's the way that the cookie has crumbled in Steeltown. We're now on to Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2007, Mark Trestman was hired as the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes. The longtime NFL assistant had no previous CFL coaching experience, which is typically considered a death knell for new hires in the CFL, but that wasn't the case for Trestman, however, as he led the Owls to a 59-31 record and two Grey Cup titles over five seasons before leaving to become the head coach of the Chicago Bears. Dunk, what do you remember? I won't ask JC because he was just a baby when this happened. But Dunk, what do you remember of Mark Trestman being hired in Montreal?
The memory that comes to mind for me doesn't actually have to do with when he was hired, because a lot of people were like getting out that list of guys who had no CFL experience that were head coaches. And who was that head coach in Montreal that got hired that was there for like a hot minute?
Dan Hawkins.
That's it. Couldn't think of the name. I think of after, and I think this is actually after Trestman was let go, fired, whatever you want to phrase it, from the Toronto Argonauts. I remember, you know, one-on-one, I was asking him this question like over and over, like, do you want to get back into coaching? And he's so sharp, right? He's like, you've asked me the same question 3 or 4 different ways. My answer's not going to change.
Nice.
So I was trying to get him to say something good, but he is super sharp. You know, it should be noted that right now he's with the Los Angeles Chargers as part of Jim Harbaugh's staff. So that's what I remember most about Mark Trestman being super sharp. And he proved that it isn't necessarily a death knell if you come into the league and respect it. You know, for all of the things that, you know, we've reported and potentially said as negatives with Mark Trestman, you know, him like texting players about them tweeting and perhaps not letting them be themselves. This guy respects the Canadian Football League, and he put the work in to be a great head coach in the CFL.
And I think some of the problems that Trestman ultimately had in Toronto and spelled his end as a head coach back in 2007, like, that's still at the end of that era of sort of hardcore controlling coaches, right? That doesn't really work anymore with the modern player, but that could still work back then. I think even if you translated Mark Trestman back 20 years before that, he would have had an even more outstanding CFL career just because he was that type of guy. But surely one of the smartest head coaches and a guy who really embraced this league when he was coming through.
The thing you have to remember with Trestman is that he is a lawyer. He has a law degree. He was called to the bar in Florida, I think in the 80s, but yeah, that man will sniff out a question more so than most people. He knows exactly what you're asking. He knows why you're asking it. This man knows the law, much less just some football questions. Like, come on. You can't beat him that way.
Clearly not. Let's go to the 3-minute drill. The Toronto Argonauts have signed former Edmonton Elks American running back Kevin Brown. What does that mean for Kadeem Carey's future in TO?
Well, Kevin Brown fell out of favor this past year at Edmonton with Justin Rankin having a great season. Obviously, Javon Leak having a great season offensively. He is still a heck of a player. So I'm not sure what this means for Kadeem Carey. I don't think it's good, though. JC, you released your annual NCAA All-Canadian CFL teams. Who is the one player you'd most encourage our listeners and viewers to check out? And don't say Curtis Rourke, because we've already talked about him 100 times. Give us a non-Curtis Rourke answer.
Well, everyone's going to focus on the 2-star Canadians in the college football player, Rourke, as you mentioned, and safety Ty Benefield out of Boise State. And they should absolutely check those guys out. But don't sleep on the FCS playoffs in the semifinal. You'll find the Montana State Bobcats. He's missed the last 2 games with injury, but hopefully he'll be back this week. Tight end Rohan Jones out of Montreal. The dude is an absolute stud, an offensive weapon, they call him. They play him out wide. They play him in the slot. They play him in line. Sometimes he even lines up in the backfield to take a handoff or return a kick. He is a do-it-all weapon at the FCS level. You should absolutely look into him. I think he's going to be a stud in the CFL one day. The Saskatchewan Huskies parted ways with defensive coordinator Warren Muzyka this week. Was that a surprise?
Warren Muzyka. I just want to make sure we get it right, because that dude was a legend at different levels. I'm pretty sure he's won a Canadian Bowl, a Vanier Cup multiple, and a Grey Cup with the Tiger Cats, actually, by the way, in 1999. It definitely was a surprise. Scott Flory hired him when Flory took over the program from Brian Towers as head coach in 2017, I believe it was. And from what I've heard, some people down on the ground there in Saskatchewan, that it seems like Muzyka just wanted to move on. But, you know, he's a guy that's developed a lot of great talent there. Nelson Lacombo, Nick Weeb among them. And their linebackers and defense really usually is fast and physical. So this is going to be a tough spot to fill for Flory. Former Saskatchewan Rough Riders head coach Craig Dickinson has been hired by his brother Dave as special teams coordinator in Calgary. Why didn't this happen last year? Like, just get on with it. Mark Killam could have been a head coach already a year earlier.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think this is a surprise to anybody. I think the only surprise is it didn't happen last year. And honestly, good for Craig Dickinson. He's been a very good special teams coordinator in this league before. I think he'll be a good one again in Cowtown. Canadian linebacker Friedrich Chagnon retired after 7 seasons in the CFL. How will you remember him?
I'll remember him as a solid special teams body, one of the guys who is unheralded like so many in this league, and ultimately as somebody who won a Vanny Cup with the Montreal Canadiens and then a Grey Cup with the Montreal Alouettes. That's a pretty decent legacy. The Saskatchewan Roughriders re-signed homegrown offensive lineman Noah Zur. Could he be a starter for the Riders in 2025?
You know, I think it's possible, but it depends who else the Rough Riders decide to bring back on the offensive line. He was one of their pending free agents. Philip Blake is, but we know he's getting up there in age. Ryan Skevier is a pending free agent as well, as along with Peter Godber. I think they would probably like to bring Godber back at center. So it depends what happens with those other guys. But he did start some games this season, and I think developed a pretty solid reputation there with Saskatchewan, which is why he was the first Canadian to re-sign with the green and white out of the offensive linemen that are pending free agents, I should say. Former CFL Most Outstanding Rookie Quantez Stiggers made his first career NFL start with the New York Jets this past weekend. Do you think he'll stay in the starting lineup for the J-E-T-S Jets, Jets, Jets?
There's no reason for him not to right now, because their team stinks and they're not going to the playoffs. So you may as well develop a guy.
Yo, Aaron Rodgers is cooked, by the way. Can we just done with this guy?
I don't disagree. There are multiple prominent U.S. figures I wish we were done with at this point. I will leave my comment at that. But regardless, I think long-term, Sauce Gardner is about to become the highest-paid defensive back in the league. And so to make that work, you're going to want somebody who's making close to league minimum opposite him at the other corner spot. So I think Stiggers could very well be that guy. The Ottawa Redblacks have re-signed former second overall draft pick Zach Pelias. Was that a smart move for the team?
I think it is. I know he has been much embattled throughout his first few seasons in the CFL, but I think he is taking a step forward in his development every single year, and he's still young as a ratio-breaking Canadian offensive tackle. You don't let that walk out the building, because offensive linemen peak in their late 20s, early 30s. I think the best is yet to come from Zach Pelias. The New York Jets have interviewed Canadian-raised Thomas Dimitroff for the team's vacant GM job. Do you think he'll get the gig?
I'm not going to go that far. I think there's a chance that he gets it. There's some people that I've talked to in Canada that think that at least, you know, with what Mike O'Shea's done in Winnipeg, it could be intriguing if Dimitroff did get the job. Does he hire Mike O'Shea? This is obviously not going to happen, or has a low chance of happening, but they share an alma mater at the University of Guelph. There's people that are saying, like, or even help him get on the coaching staff. Like, what else does Mike O'Shea have to prove in Canada? And there are some people saying that, you know, you should go take a crack at the NFL.
Dimitroff
has said fun with our people.
He has said in the past that he believes that Mike O'Shea could coach at the NFL level. He said that on the record.
He said that Mike O'Shea should be an NFL defensive coordinator, which I thought was interesting considering Mike O'Shea has never been a CFL offensive coordinator, but you are our defensive coordinator, but you are right. He is on the record saying that Mike O'Shea should be coaching the NFL.
You never know, boys. The Ottawa Redblacks signed pass rusher Bryce Carter to a 2-year contract extension through 2026. Can he return to all-star status after an injury limited him to 11 games in 2024?
Yes, I absolutely do. He is a fixture on that Ottawa Redblacks defensive line, and I do think a very nice player. As an aside, can we just talk about how awesome it is that in the NFL, when you interview somebody for a high-level personnel job or a coaching job, they just announce that they've completed the interview? Wouldn't CFL fans love it if CFL teams started doing this? Like, I know we at Three Down Nation report a lot of this information. Arguably, if it gets formally announced, that could hurt us. But I don't even care, because in a professional organization, these types of things should be announced. I wish that the CFL took a leaf from the NFL's book, so to speak, on this regard. But regardless,
yes, I would love the Hamilton Tiger Cats to announce the mystery candidate that interviewed for their GM position. So yes, Hodge, I 110% agree with you, because then we would know who this unknown mystery candidate was in the Hammer.
Maybe the mystery candidate is the friends we made along the way.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh.
For all the listeners and viewers there, thank you so much for sticking through us in this mega podcast. I know Hodges hated how long it's run, but for the entire year in 2024, you are honestly what makes this site great, and you hold us to account too, right? You keep us balanced. So thank you so much for your support. As Hodge noted off the top, going into our 10-year anniversary in May 2025, it's unbelievable that it's lasted this long, and it's just a real treat. Like, I don't think the three of us or any of our contributors really feel, you know, maybe certain times, but that this is work on a day-to-day basis is something that we're passionate about, that we love, just like the fans love, just like the coaches and players, the executives in this league all love it. So it's a common passion, I think, that we share. We do like to hold people to account, but we're also happy to be held to an account as well. So whatever you celebrate over the holiday season, we hope you enjoy it. And great things, ideally for all of us, come for this league in a new year. But don't hold your breath for that schedule, I suppose, eh, Hutch?
Yeah, well, I was told that the teams haven't approved it yet. So that's what's holding it up. Could happen before the break. Might not happen until after the break. Regardless, as soon as it is announced, we'll, of course, have it up at 3downnation.com, along with just about any other piece of news, analysis, insight, opinion, whatever it is you could possibly want, CFL, Canadian football, all of it. Thank you again for listening, watching. This is our last show of 2024. We'll be back in 2025. So stay tuned to our podcast channel, YouTube, all that good stuff. For Justin Duncan, JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you next time.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.